From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. Wherever you are in the United States, the U.S. Postal Service delivers the mail, and it's been doing that for 2.5 centuries. But now, the USPS is on the edge of insolvency. It could run out of money in just a few months. The agency is hoping for a congressional bailout. President Trump is pushing for drastic price hikes. Still others suggest an even bigger transformation, privatizing the USPS. So this hour on Point, what could we gain and what might we lose with a for-profit postal service? And we're going to begin today with Natasha Patterson. She's president of the Florida Rural Letter Carriers Association, which represents 10,000 letter carriers, rural letter carriers. And she's been a letter carrier for the USPS for 16 years. Natasha, welcome to On Point.
Thank you.
I wonder if you might start off by describing your route a little bit and what it's been like working for the USPS.
You know, I love delivering mail as a rural letter carrier for the Postal Service. And I can tell you, and throughout Florida, our routes vary, whether it be urban or rural territory. Rural letter carriers are special in a sense. We're a post office on wheels. We actually sell stamps and mail parcels for our customers, especially out in the rural areas that can't make it to a local post office or that may be miles away. And I do that on my route as well. So I really enjoy doing it and serving the communities. I look forward to it every single day, and I couldn't be more proud in a time like this.
And how has the job changed, or what has the day-to-day been like since the nation's been in the grip of this pandemic?
Well, since the outbreak of the COVID-19 pandemic, rural letter carriers have been on the front lines delivering essential items such as food, stimulus checks, census reports, and over 4 million prescription medications per day. And they do that while Americans shelter in place. The package volume is up 82%. However, we've seen a decline in the mail volume. The mailers are simply not advertising. They're not sending that data out like they used to. So we've seen that impact in the field.
So just to repeat, package volume is not just up, it's way up. But there has been a commensurate drop in regular mail volume. Can you tell me a little bit, you wrote about the future of the United States Postal Service recently. You wrote an op-ed, and you're requesting Congress to step in and to provide a bailout for the USPS. Why?
Absolutely. You know, it's a public service. It's part of American culture. It's something we've been doing for over 2.5 centuries. It doesn't matter what zip code you live in, your income, your age, your nationality. There's a universal mail service obligation throughout this country to 159 million addresses, including many rural towns. It also includes elderly and our veterans, and it has a significant impact from e-commerce. And the Postal Service delivers 470 million pieces each day of mail. We can't risk losing that in this country.
We can't risk losing it in the short term or the long term. But why congressional bailout as the immediate answer? Because as you heard from the introduction of the show, we're going to explore, other ideas, including the renewed calls for maybe that it's time to privatize the Postal Service. What do you think of that idea?
I definitely disagree with that idea. We should never cut the service to the public people. I know you're going to have Representative Connolly on as well, and I'd like to thank him. He's been a longtime advocate for meaningful postal reform for a substantial amount of years. But the reality is we've come to a point where we can't reform the Postal Service at this moment in time. We need to save it. We can reform it later with some meaningful reform. But right now, we're at the end of the road. We need the assistance from Congress.
Okay, so the urgency of this moment you're speaking to. Now, one last question for you, if I may, because I imagine that any postal carrier's route is also a daily experience of hundreds, if not thousands, of stories, given all the addresses and residences that you visit to drop off the mail. Do you have a particular story that stayed with you recently? I know that you told our producer, as we were preparing for this show, about a woman named Miss Carmen.
Miss Carmen, one of my favorite customers. I've known her for 12 years. I met her after her husband passed away. He used to get the mail every day, and now she comes to get the mail. Miss Carmen and I speak every single day. She comes and tells me what's going on in her life. And one day, Miss Carmen, who's 83 years old, showed up to the mailbox very upset because she wears a certain type of flip-flop slide shoe, per se. She wears them with socks. And it's the only shoe that she can wear and effectively move around through the community and run her errands and walk. And they broke. And she was not able to find another pair of them. So I took a look at her shoes and inspected them. They were very worn out. It was very hard to find any identifying marks, and they were discontinued. But luckily, being an internet sleuth, I was able to find her not just one, but two pairs of those exact same shoes in her size. I ordered them off the internet. They came a few days later, and I hand-delivered them to her at her house, and she cried. And she was just so overwhelmed that I could help her like that. And those are the stories that our rural letter carriers throughout this country, and especially in Florida, that's what we do. It's more than delivering mail. We have a sense of pride and obligation in our communities. It was part of the oath that we took. We're not required to do that, but that's what we do. We care about our people.
Well, Natasha Patterson is president of the Florida Rural Letter Carriers Association. They represent 10,000 rural letter carriers, and she's been doing that work for the USPS for 16 years. Natasha, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Okay, so now let's turn to Washington, which is the center of the concern over the future of the United States Postal Service. Just last month, President Trump threatened to withhold an emergency loan to the Postal Service unless they raised shipping prices.
They're handing out packages for Amazon and other internet companies, and every time they bring a package, they lose money on it. So Amazon and other internet companies and delivery companies are dropping all of their, not all of them, but a big portion of packages and whatever else they're doing into a post office. And the post office is supposed to deliver the packages, and they lose a lot of money. The post office should raise the price of a package by approximately four times because they don't raise them.
President Donald Trump just last month. Well, joining me now with more is Lisa Rhine. She's a reporter covering federal agencies and the management of government in the Trump administration, and she does that for The Washington Post, and we have a link to a lot of her reporting at onpointradio.org. Lisa, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
So I wonder if you might start with the present-day urgency over the solvency of the USPS. Why is it on the brink of going bust?
Right. It's so interesting because the debate in Congress over the future of the Postal Service has been going on for many years, but it's really kind of come to a head now with the pandemic because, you know, as Natasha said previously, what we've seen, you know, as people have been homebound, they're ordering more and more, you know, prescriptions, even food, you know, all kinds of things online. And the package deliveries to them is just exploding. I think the number is, you know, that there's been an increase of something like 70% in package delivery in the last 2 months. But at the same time, you know, business advertisers are obviously, you know, hamstrung economically, and there's less advertising. So what the Postal Service, you know, told Congress a couple of months ago is that the pandemic is going to add about $22 billion, you know, to the agency's continuing operating losses over the next 18 months. And they basically, you know, the Postmaster General said, you know, that they are on track to lose about $13 billion, you know, by the end of the fiscal year in September. Now, Republicans in Congress have noted that, you know, the figures, the weekly revenue figures have actually not been quite as bleak in recent weeks as the Postal Service anticipated. But we're really at a fascinating sort of political and ideological, maybe, showdown that the pandemic has brought out.
Okay, so we'll dig into that that showdown a little bit more. But with this massive increase, surge in package delivery, I mean, that is what I think the president was pointing to in that clip that we played, that that the USPS is doing a lot of that last mile work for mega companies like Amazon. Can you tell us in any detail what the deal is between Amazon and the Postal Service?
Well, so as the, you know, the agency has really struggled just for 10 years, right, to kind of remake itself for an internet age when first class mail, as we all know, has precipitously declined. And so I'd say in around the past 5 years or so, you know, the package business has been really a boon in profitability for them, although it hasn't covered, you know, the other losses, as we've said. So the Postal Service does business, you know, huge business, you know, with UPS, with FedEx, as well as with Amazon, as well as, you know, a whole range of package companies that it delivers mail for. And it has what are basically proprietary arrangements. They're called negotiated service agreements in postal parlance that it makes, you know, with all of these shippers. And it gives them volume discounts, essentially, so that if they are able to get their packages to a distribution center that is fairly close to, you know, the closest post office, you know, a lot of the work is done for the Postal Service. And then the Postal Service will deliver, you know, the last mile or even more than that. The advantage to the package companies, right, is that the Postal Service is going there anyway, especially to remote areas of the country, you know, to Alaska, you know, to rural America, let's say where Natasha delivers, where it's not profitable for, you know, these shippers like Amazon, UPS to deliver. And so they pay the Postal Service to do that last part of delivery.
Right. So Lisa, hang on here for just a second,
sure,
if you could, because we have to take a quick break. And I want to dig in a little bit more into that relationship that the USPS has with those other package companies, and also more of the history of how the USPS got to this point. So that's all coming up when we come back, when we talk about the future of the United States Postal Service. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We are taking a look at the future of the United States Postal Service, and Lisa Ryan joins us today to help us do that. She's a Washington Post reporter who covers federal agencies and the management of government in the Trump administration. And we got a lot of calls about this hour. People really care about the USPS, including mail carriers themselves. For example, this is Josh from Barnwell, South Carolina. He's a rural carrier associate there. And he worries that if the post office were to be privatized, it could threaten his job security.
But I fear it can turn into my past retail jobs, where hours and pay were slashed and, you know, more work is put on a skeleton crew, just enough to, you know, keep the doors open to maximize profits. You know, it was one of the benefits that drew me to the Postal Service was, you know, the protection with the union. You know, having that bargaining power and that, you know, others, you know, feeling like they got you back.
Well, Jennifer also gave us a call. She carries the mail in East Tennessee, and here's what she sees as the major issue facing the U.S. Postal Service.
The post office is the most trusted agency in the government. A package tax or a bailout is not needed for the post office. They just need to pass legislation that's already been written that doesn't require the post office to pre-fund 75 years of pension.
Okay, so that's Lisa from East... that's Jennifer from East Tennessee. Now, Lisa, let me come back to you. I will circle back eventually to Amazon and UPS and FedEx, because they're big players in terms of the post office's current issues. But Jennifer there, who pointed back to some earlier history, can you go through that with us, Lisa? How far back should we be looking here to pinpoint the start of the male's troubles?
Right. Well, I do want to say I'm going to go back even further just because I think the callers you're getting, you know, are really speaking to what a storied history this agency has, and also the nostalgia that most Americans really have for it, you know, however obsolete, you know, putting a letter in the mail has become, as we all know, in the internet age, right? But the Postal Service was, you know, started in the 1770s by, you know, our founders and the Continental Congress, you know, they told Ben Franklin, we want to start a postal service so that people, you know, can communicate, so that newspapers can tell, you know, people in the colonies what's going on. And anyway, and then in the Civil War, there was a huge expansion. And of course, you know, in this century, the agency has been a great employer for Black Americans, you know, one of the first employers in the federal government. And so, yeah, they're really, I just can't underestimate the nostalgia that I think we all feel for the Postal Service as it just continues to deliver the mail in this pandemic. And, you know, everybody has a mail truck that comes by their house, whether you live in an apartment and, you know, in the city, whether you live in Silver Spring, Maryland, like I do, or, you know, whether you live in rural Montana. But to get to your real question about the troubles. So in 2006, the Congress passed a law to require the agency to be somewhat more self-sufficient, to be able to cover, you know, pension payments for its retiring workforce, which now numbers 620,000 people, mail carriers, clerks, so many people. And they required that the Postal Service, you know, in this very kind of singular manner, set aside, you know, its payments for health costs for retirees. And this is not something that other corners of the government, other agencies have to do, but it was an attempt to get them to be more self-sufficient. And this happened, unfortunately, just as, you know, the internet age was really causing the whole business model to collapse. And so that has been a problem. They have not been able to make these what we call prepayments, which come to, you know, a couple of billion dollars a year. I don't know that that's the
Lisa,
only
can I just,
problem.
Can I just jump
it's
in here?
One problem.
Yes. Can I just jump in here for a second? There's so much that you just said I want to respond to. First of all, in terms of the long history of the USPS, it occurs to me that also over that 2.5 centuries that you very quickly outlined that the Postal Service survived the new technologies, right? We had the telephone and telegraph in the middle of all that, that the USPS survived. People still sent the mail. And of course, so now we have the internet. It's a completely different thing. So I just wanted to point that out. Like if you're looking across a really long history here, there were other technological innovations that the USPS soldiered through. But to your point about this, the 2006 legislation, I mean, at the time, it wasn't a bad idea, right? Because one of the things that's really hampering a lot of organizations, states, for example, or even cities, are these deferred liabilities with pension payments. So the idea of having to take care of those in advance, it's not a bad idea. So why did it end up being a financial albatross around the USPS's neck?
That's right. So this law did many things. Among them was to limit the Postal Service's ability to raise prices, let's say, for the cost of stamps. And the cost of stamps, even, you know, as we speak today, is very much tied to inflation. So they cannot raise the price of a stamp, of a first-class stamp, and other products as well, you know, beyond the cost of inflation. So in the recession in 2008, they did get special permission from postal regulators to raise stamp prices, but then they had to actually lower them back down, you know, when the economy picked up. So their revenues have just, you know, have just plummeted, as you know, we've said. And so what they have been relying on more and more in the last 10 years or so is basically our loans. It's just, you know, a kind of a constant line of credit from the Treasury Department to you know, which obviously that's been the right thing for the government to do. So essentially they are being bailed out as we speak in some manner, right? Mm. Because they're getting a loan. But this is what brings us to the present day controversies.
Right. And one thing, just to be sure we have all our facts straight here, the USPS is required to essentially, well, beyond those loans aside for a second, it's supposed to fund itself, right?
That's right. And that's a provision of the law, a new law that essentially took effect in 1970 when the Postal Service ceased to become just a regular cabinet agency, you know, like the Department of State or the Department of Energy, which is funded by, you know, government operations, by taxpayers, right? So there was a big strike by postal workers at the time. They, you know, were striking for better wages and working conditions. And, you know, as a result, sort of an exchange, there were lots of, you know, fundamental structural changes that Congress made. And essentially, the Postal Service became a standalone agency that won collective bargaining rights for the employees, which has made the Postal Service one of the last, you know, remaining powerful public sector unions to this day. But they also, you know, were Congress said, you've got to be, you know, self-sustaining. And Congress is not going to really give you operating expenses, except mm-hmm. that it's going to help you with absentee ballots, you know, for election time. But we're also going to control your fate, and we're going to control what you do because we have essentially given you a monopoly to deliver the mail. And so you are the only people who deliver the mail. Well, of course, this was before, you know, package deliveries became a very competitive business. We give you the authority to deliver the mail to every household in America. So it's a very fascinating and complex kind of hybrid of government authority.
Indeed. And the complexity is actually one of the reasons, one of the things that makes me wonder, there must be a whole spectrum of solutions here for the USPS. But to circle back now to the thing that the president was saying earlier in that clip that we played earlier in the show, where he said, why isn't the USPS raising those package rates on companies like Amazon or FedEx, Amazon being the president's particular hobby horse here. But I get that the USPS can't raise stamp rates beyond a certain amount. Does that also apply for the deals that they're striking with these companies? And if not, why aren't they raising those package rates?
Right. So a couple things I just want to say is just for your listeners, you know, the president's relationship with Amazon has been very complex because Amazon's owner, Jeff Bezos, also owns The Washington Post, and Trump does not like the paper's coverage of his administration. And so that really, you know, his animus toward Amazon in particular is definitely, you know, he's very much been open about this, you know, is motivated by his feelings about Jeff Bezos. But so we don't really know exactly what the Postal Service is charging all of these package companies, because those agreements are, you know, they're private contracts, and, you know, they're based on proprietary information. We do not actually know whether the companies are being undercharged or not. What we do know, because this is a law, you know, that the regulators require, what they require is that the cost that Amazon, I'm sorry, that the Postal Service covers its costs of its operating costs, you know, to deliver any package for FedEx, mm-hmm. for UPS, for Amazon, you know, for Walmart, whatever. It must cover its costs, and then a little bit more. So
Lisa, I got to jump in here. Forgive me for jumping in here, but this gets my inner transparency button pushed really hard. Why don't we know? This is not national security. Is it proprietary information on Amazon's side or the post office's side?
No, it's just the way the law is written. I mean, in other words, all of these companies are competing. I mean, the package business, package delivery business has, you know, is a very, very competitive one. And so, you know, and this is part of what the complexity of the debate going on here, right? Because UPS and FedEx have lost market share in recent years to Amazon and to the Postal Service. And so, no, I mean, I think any business is not going to discuss the nature of its business arrangements, you know, with other competitors. But what has happened actually in the climate we're in now? I mean, I think it's highly unrealistic that the Postal Service would raise its prices by 400%, because I think it's pretty much agreed that this would cause it to go out of business, because, you know, the package deliverers would just go elsewhere and build out their own ground networks, as some of them are doing. So this is a very complicated thing.
Lisa, I appreciate you you pulling the veil back as far as you can. I do appreciate that. But, you know, anytime someone says it's proprietary, I want to be like, well, why? Okay, so now let's dig in more to the question of whether or not this is the time to privatize the USPS for its long-term well-being. And we have a lot of responses from listeners about this. This Tim called us from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. He owns an independent business that depends on the Postal Service to ship handmade sculptures. And Tim called us to tell us he worries that a private postal service could have a huge impact on rural communities.
Just as we have food and healthcare deserts, we're going to have shipping deserts. Only large companies like Amazon will have easy access and special rates, and they'll pay to shut out smaller competition. We ought to be subsidizing postal rates, including international rates, to foster the growth of small business across the country. Consumers expect reasonable postage rates, and if they don't get them, they'll shop elsewhere.
Well, joining us now to talk more about what a private postal service might look like is Chris Edwards. He's director of tax policy studies at the Cato Institute, and he's testified before the House Committee on Oversight and Reform about privatizing the U.S. Postal Service. Chris, welcome to On Point.
Thanks a lot for having me.
It's great to have you. So just give us your best argument as to why you think privatization is the best long-term solution for the USPS.
Well, there's been a lot of comments so far about what an important institution the USPS is, and I absolutely agree with that. And I would argue that the only way that this institution can survive in the long run is to move it to the private sector. The problem now is that as part of the government, the USPS does not have the flexibility it needs to survive. So, for example, the letter volume has fallen 50% over the last two decades. Any normal business would diversify, would try to find new revenue sources. But the USPS is not allowed to do that. It's not allowed to go into, say, postal banking or grocery delivery or that sort of thing. So Congress puts a straitjacket on it. It's not allowed to reduce its costs. So postal systems around the world are reducing the number of days of delivery. And it doesn't make sense that we're delivering to every address 6 days a week. So an obvious cost-cutting thing we can do would be to reduce the number of days of delivery. In addition, there are thousands of post office locations that hardly get any customers. Indeed, the USPS's own data show that there's over 4,000 post office locations that only get an average of 4 customers a day. That makes no economic sense. It also makes no environmental sense to have these standalone post offices where no one goes anymore. So a lot of countries that have privatized their systems, like Germany, have closed standalone locations and moved them, say, to grocery stores or convenience stores. That's a way to save costs, but also makes things more convenient for consumers.
So Chris, can I just jump in here for a second and forgive me? There's a slight delay on the line, so I don't mean to actually cut you off mid-sentence there, but talk about Germany a little bit more, because there are several European nations that have privatized their mail delivery successfully. So what has Germany done right?
So Germany privatized Deutsche Post, its dominant postal carrier, two decades ago, and it's been a big success. Deutsche Post doesn't get subsidies now. They deliver to every address like they used to when they were part of the government. And this has been the pattern around Europe. Britain privatized its Royal Mail 5 years ago. The Netherlands privatized its system a decade or so ago. Usually the private systems are required to go to every address, but it may not be 6 days a week. It may be a reduced number of days to save costs. And like I was saying, many many of the European systems, they've moved their post office locations into places that are more convenient for consumers, like grocery stores. So that makes a lot of sense. One of the problems with the USPS now is it needs new money for investment. It needs to buy new trucks. It needs to buy new technologies to keep in competition with FedEx and UPS. But it's being starved of money as part of government. Congress doesn't give it any money. And so it's being starved. If you moved it to the private sector, it could raise money for investment. And I think in the long run, that would be good for USPS workers and the whole economy.
Right. Well, Chris Edwards, can you hang on here for a little bit? Because I've got a couple more questions for you after the break. Would that be all right?
Sure.
Okay, so we are talking about the future of the United States Postal Service and whether or not this is the time to consider privatization. We'll have more when we come back. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Seen. Listen and follow Last Seen wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We are talking about the future of the U.S. Postal Service today, and I'm joined by Lisa Ryan. She's a reporter covering federal agencies and the management of government in the Trump administration. She does that for The Washington Post. And Chris Edwards is director of tax policy studies at the Cato Institute, and he's with us as well. And Chris, I just had a couple more quick questions for you about the idea of privatizing the Postal Service. Now, first of all, you mentioned quickly before the break that in places like Germany, for example, with their private postal service there, the company that owns the mail delivery is still required in Germany to deliver to every address, because I think that's one of the repeated concerns that we've heard coming up from listeners, that would they lose their mail service?
That's right. The privatized European systems like Deutsche Post in Germany and Royal Mail in Britain are required to deliver to every address in the country. But not necessarily every 6 days a week like we do in the United States. In fact, for example, in New Zealand, they've now gone to 3 days a week delivery, which makes a lot of sense to me because the volume of mail has dropped so much. And frankly, over 60% of letter mail volume today is junk mail. It's advertising mail. People don't need to get that 6 days a week. A fewer number of days of delivery makes a lot more sense to me.
Mm. So there's the possibility of, as you said, accessing capital from new places. There's a possibility of entering new markets. There's the possibility of being more responsive to what the current market is. I'm hearing a lot of possibilities within privatization. But there's also, even if people get mail still to their homes, 3-5 days a week, whatnot. Is there not also the possibility of the reduction of service overall? And the reason why I ask is, you heard throughout this hour in the tape, especially from our listeners, that it's the USPS is considered more of a service that they have a right to, rather than a service that's a privilege to have. Do you see what I'm saying? It like has a different meaning and feeling for most Americans.
You know what? I think people, change has to happen. We're in a very dynamic economy. I think people who think you can put a few Band-Aids on the post office and it would be, it'll survive, are in denial. But the post office does two things. It essentially, it delivers junk mail on the one hand, and on the other hand, it delivers packages. Well, we already have private companies that deliver packages, and the USPS is in tough competition there. Here's something to think about. Before The reason why we have FedEx today, which is, if everyone would agree, is a very successful company, is because of a deregulation or privatization that occurred in 1979. And there was a deregulation that allowed private companies to come in and deliver what were called extremely urgent letters. And that is the, and that opened up this whole business for FedEx. So FedEx was essentially the privatization of postal services, but everyone can look back now and see that that was a very successful privatization, because FedEx has become this extremely productive and beneficial company for the U.S. economy. And I'm saying, take that model of privatization and bring it further to cover the rest of the letter mail volume.
Right. And as you point out, which has been done successfully elsewhere. So Chris Edwards, Director of Tax Policy Studies at the Cato Institute, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
All right. So let's hear now from Democratic Representative Jerry Connolly. He represents Virginia's 11th district and is chairman of the Subcommittee on Government Operations, which oversees the USPS. Congressman Connolly, thank you so much for joining us. Welcome to On
My
Point.
My pleasure, Magna. Thank you.
So first of all, there's about 500 different questions I could ask you, Congressman, but let me just ask the big one. Is it possible that now actually is the right time, for all of the reasons that Chris just laid out, that privatization might be one of the best long-term solutions for the USPS?
You know, the Koch brothers funded Cato Institute has had an agenda to dismantle lots of government programs or quasi-governmental programs for a long time. And what you just heard from Chris was really, I believe, a distortion of reality. And comparing us to Germany, for example, Germany doesn't have a constitutional mandate to provide postal service. The United States of America does. It's written into our Constitution. It's the only service required by the Constitution of the United States. And we've been providing that service since even before the founding of the Republic. Since 1775, Ben Franklin was the first postmaster general, if you will, and he understood that this was a vital service that connected America no matter where you lived. It still is. Chris wants you to believe that all they manage is junk mail. That is an enormous distortion and, frankly, an insult to millions of Americans who rely on this lifeline for essential medical equipment, prescription drugs, foodstuffs, business transactions, other communications that are really vital to them, especially in rural America, by the way, in terms of their isolation otherwise.
Right. Well, Congressman, if I can just jump in here, Natasha, the rural mail carrier who we launched the show with, she pointed that out, that what's in the mailbags every day. So I'm glad you made that point once again.
And if I could also just... Chris, another distortion, he compared it to FedEx, and that's a model to see how successful. Even with the decline in mail volume, let's look at the reality. This is a matter of scope and magnitude. The Postal Service, in 1 week, still manages more mail volume than FedEx does in a whole year. And in one month, the Postal Service handles more volume than all of its private sector competitors combined in a year. There is no comparison. FedEx gets to cherry pick. FedEx gets to decide how to price and where to deliver and where not to deliver. And in fact, ironically, relies on the Postal Service to deliver to those routes it doesn't want to deliver.
Well, Congressman, I wonder if I agree with you. I don't want to get bogged down in sort of a binary thinking here, right? It doesn't have to be 100% public owned versus the only other option being 100% of free market, free for all. Because I was trying to think of what other solutions might be, solutions which maybe Americans are already quite familiar with. And just let me give you an example and tell me if it's off the wall or not. But I was just thinking about electric utilities. They are providing an essential public service to almost every household in America. Many of the utilities are actually privately owned or they're owned by shareholders, but they are heavily publicly regulated and they are required to provide service. This is a model we already have. Could something like that be applied to the USPS?
There are lots of prospects, I think, for what we might do. But let's start with, we're in a democracy, and overwhelmingly the American people want this service. It is, in their minds, an essential service. How do we know that? Well, in polling, the Postal Service is the most esteemed service in America in terms of quasi-public or public service. Government gets 17% approval. Postal Service gets 74%. And when asked in a recent poll done by Peter Hart and Associates, you know, hey, the Postal Service is in trouble. It's going to run out of cash. It's really been hurt hard by COVID-19, losing $3 billion a month. Should the federal government, should Congress provide some assistance to keep it going so that there's uninterrupted service? 90th percentile. Republicans and Democrats say yes. So in a democracy, I think we have to respect the public will about this. It's a constant in people's lives. But there are lots of things we can do to create a new business model as we evolve. One area I will agree with Chris from Cato is the 2006 legislation passed in the lame duck Republican Congress really put the Postal Service in a straitjacket, and we ought to relieve that. We ought to relieve the prepayment requirement for health care benefits that absolutely has shackled the Postal Service in terms of an artificial debt it ought to be relieved of. And by the way, despite what Chris said, in the last 6 years, if you took away the debt problem on an operational basic, in most of those 6 years, the post office, even with declining volume in first-class mail, actually made a technical profit. It actually operated in the black. So it's not in this dire shape that has to be, you know, put on emergency support life services. It does have a problem right now, and it's had a problem Congress has ignored because there is no taxpayer money going into the Postal Service. And there needs to be to shore it up and make those capital investments. Chris talked about, especially the vehicular fleet. Postal Service has the largest vehicle fleet in America.
Let me just jump in here and say, so you're pointing out to the debt problem and that Congress could actually take care of that. Is there any appetite in Congress as well, Representative, for removing some of the other straitjackets that Lisa pointed out, like the pricing ones?
Pricing is controlled by the Postal Regulatory Commission, and not getting into proprietary. The fact of the matter is, despite what some people like Donald Trump and critics of the Postal Service don't want to admit, is a package delivery is a growing part of the Postal Service, and they're competitive, and the price is set by the Postal Regulatory Commission. It is not set by the President, by the Treasury Department, or by the Cato Institute, or by me. And they make a profit on it. And it's growing, but it's not big enough to offset the lost volume and revenue of first-class mail. We need to unshackle them and let a thousand flowers bloom. Make the post office a place of central activity. You ought to be able to do local government transactions. You ought to be able to renew your driver's license, maybe renew your passport, pay your taxes. Maybe the Postal Service could sign a contract with Starbucks or Pete's or some other coffee service and offer coffee. If you go to your Safeway, you can do banking transaction there. You can buy Starbucks coffee there because they have contracts with those entities. Why can't we let the Postal Service do that as well as alternative revenue sources, which is done successfully, by the way, in Europe?
So it sounds like a great bill to sponsor, Congressman.
I already have.
Okay.
but the problem is so few of my colleagues until this pandemic have really focused on the impending crisis that's been building since 2006, in part caused by Congress, but in part, obviously, a function of changing market trends and technology. And we need to buy time for the Postal Service to create a new business model for the 21st century. But we don't have to end the universal service. Now, for example, Chris mentioned 6 days a week. The irony of what that is if you got rid of 6 days a week and went to five, believe me, the net savings is not that very big. It certainly wouldn't save the Postal Service from its crushing financial challenge. Mm-hmm. But you're also giving up a competitive advantage because we're now moving to 7-day-a-week delivery in many places because that's what the market demands. So giving up that competitive advantage would be foolish and wouldn't save much money.
Well, Representative Jerry Connolly is representative, Democratic representative for Virginia's 11th district, and he's also chairman of the Subcommittee on Government Operations, which oversees the USPS. Congressman Connolly, thank you so much for joining us today.
My great pleasure, Magna. Thank you for having me.
All right, Lisa, you have been very patient in
of
listening
course.
To both Chris and the congressman there. Just sort of check what you heard. First of all, regarding privatization, how much fervor is there for this? Is it actually a small number of voices, or does it have more? Is it gaining traction in Congress at all?
I think my impression is that right now this is a small number of voices who are, ideologically committed to a change like this. Mostly, at think tanks who do great work, thinking of new public policy ideas. I do not see any traction in Congress for this. The question I'm asking is, who's going to buy the Postal Service, right? I mean, it's mm-hmm. not a profitable institution. And so, do you have multiple buyers who sort of carve up the territory of the United States? I don't know. I'm not really sure how that works and how a company, despite what Chris is saying about, raising capital, how a company turns a profit. And then, of course, there is, the question, that... the congressman raises, okay, so the Constitution says, we must deliver mail to every home in America. And if you privatize, Congress has to step in and say, okay, we're going to allow a private company to take over. Congress has to face very thorny questions about whether the universal service mandate, which is what we're talking about, would be required to stay in place or not.
Well, that's why the electric utility idea comes to mind for me again, because most homes that want it can't get wired for electricity. The trade-off is in the rate that ratepayers pay. Like, maybe we just would have to pay more money for the mail, even if it's semi-privatized.
Right. Yeah. And the raises interesting issues because, the utilities have been deregulated in many states, and this is all the prices that they charge are really tied to to the cost of electricity, and I don't know, all kinds of factors. I don't know if they translate to these factors.
The market for electricity. Yep, that's true.
Yeah, but the other thing I just did want to quickly say about what the congressman was saying, about sort of trying to have Congress sort of step in to give the Postal Service more options for different revenues. I think that the tricky thing there is that, Congress has tried for, 6 or 7 years to actually pass legislation, bipartisan legislation, to perhaps consider five-day delivery, right? Or to give the opportunity for postal banking. To allow sales in Staples offices. The problem mm-hmm. is that the unions very much oppose those efforts because they would really uh-huh. Result in a smaller workforce. And those are very powerful political factors at work.
Well, Lisa Rhine, who's a reporter covering federal agencies and management of government in the Trump administration for The Washington Post. Lisa, I feel like we barely scratched the surface, but thank you so much for joining us today.
It was great. Thank you so much. I love the Postal Service. I love talking about it. Thank you.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
There's hardly room for anything more.
There's been a mail explosion.
They've got a terrible load. You've got to help them right away before the U.S.